I was also extremely afraid because Zygmunt had left, but what if he came back to the house and he hurt me or he hurt my family? Now, my heart was racing. Then, just like a bad dream, it happened. The back door of our family home quietly opened, and in stepped an angry Zygmunt. Very angry. Hi, I'm Paul Hart, and this is Life's Learning Curve, the podcast. What's our podcast about? Well, here at Life's Learning Curve, we look back, we tell a story or two and apply it to our lives, how we've changed. And we have. How these stories have changed us, and there's happiness and sadness, and there's fear, and there's grief and joy.
Life.
That's us. On today's episode, have you ever realized an ugly truth of life before your parents realized it? 11-year-old me made a terrible discovery many years ago, which involved my dad, his friends, poker, and overall honesty.
Life's Learning Curve with Paul Hart. Episode Flim Flam Poker Night. Stand by.
Once every 3 months on a Thursday night, as I recall, my dad hosted a poker game in the back room of our basement, 7 o'clock p.m. to 9:30-ish p.m.
Hi, Bob.
Now, my dad was a school principal, and I always found it odd to see former teachers, administrators I knew from the school district come shuffling down our basement steps of our house. We were Midwestern. We were very middle class, and they were there to play at just a little five-card stud. I'm sure there was probably some money involved, but that was never mentioned. Just assumed. I don't recall hearing any bad language from these middle-aged men from education, just an occasional loud moan or two when someone laid down their hand to probably reveal a straight flush or four of a kind. My mother, during these poker games, she was a teacher, and as the men occupied the back room of the basement, she diligently was upstairs in the front room grading papers. I know she had prepared, prior to the Thursday night poker game, she prepared small hors d'oeuvres for the guys. Crackers, popcorn, cheese, peanuts. Guys like peanuts. She also diligently and obediently brought cold drinks to them as well. She got in, she got out of that room. It was a school night, Thursday night, so there wasn't much alcohol happening, but yes, a lot of smoking cigarettes, back when everyone seemed to smoke cigarettes. Cigarettes were still one of life's unknown negatives back then. I wasn't allowed to go down there. I was 11 when the men were playing cards, nor was my sister, who was a couple years older.
"That's your father's time to have with his friends,"
said my mom.
"Okay."
I understood that, but as I grew up, I had this natural curiosity. I wanted to see what it was like. What was going on in that room? I mean, it couldn't just be card playing, could it? Maybe it was. I didn't know. There had to be something else. There had to be something more. But then again, these were middle-aged guys, so
lay him down.
It could be card playing. I don't know. Something more exciting, I thought, needed to be going on. As an 11-year-old kid, I needed to know. And although I was told not to breach the back room of the basement on card night, I was allowed in the pre-game night setup. On most nights prior to the card game, my dad would ask,
"Hey, Paul, can you come help me set up the basement room for card night?"
"Sure, Dad."
So I did. was one of the things my dad always seemed excited about. I recall we vacuumed the floor. We set up these two heavy, finger-pinching, long lunchroom tables, as I called them. Then my dad and I carefully covered the top of each table with this repurposed, my mom had customized it, this blanket that acted like what was like a felt covering for the top of the table. I imagined the cards wouldn't fly off the table when being dealt with this nice felt-like cloth on the top. But mostly I knew something. I knew that my dad, he was making his own version of his a Las Vegas card table thing. He was doing it for his friends. I'm sure when he went to their house to play cards that they had fancy schmancy card tables to play on. But this was his own version of a Vegas card table. So after we set up the tables and covered them, we then got out these 10 very tinny folding chairs, a little bit wobbly, and we carefully put four of them in on each side of the table. Four on one side, four on the other side, and then two on the end caps, you know, one on each end cap. Finally, we laid out five decks of cards. It was kind of fun setting this up with my dad, in stacks of poker chips. And I placed four ashtrays in a measured sequence on the felt-like table tops.
How's that, Dad?
Preparation complete. It was a seemingly ordinary Thursday night, my dad's poker night at our family house once again. I'm still 11 years old, but this night, this particular night would be quite different. Something happened, something well outside the loop of my 11-year-old understanding. Okay. Sequentially, similarly, just like always, once again, they all arrived, the usual suspects, my father's school district friends.
Hi, Bob.
And they quietly padded in through the back door after a couple knocks and down the basement stairs. From a distant room away, as they entered the back door, I studied them. I studied each man as they entered, and I was trying to remember, which ones do I know, and which ones do I not know? Card night on that Thursday night was beginning. As always, each one of these nights were weirdly captivating to me and intriguing. And there was one man, which I didn't ever know, who spoke in a German accent. And I kind of always looked forward to hearing that different accent, that variety. He spoke English, but he had an accent to it. And he always took time. He was the only one who took time to stop and say hello to my mother, who was in the other room grading papers. Now, even though I was 11 years old, and I was sitting right next to my mom.
Hello. Hello, Shirley.
He bellowed, his voice growing louder with each word.
How are your feet doing? Up and walking?
He growled in a march-like cadence. Now, my mom had experienced several reconstructive surgeries on her feet in her middle years, and it was around this time. So, if you're with my mom, people were kind. They were actually always asking her how her feet were. But this German-sounding man's name was Zygmunt Burkhardt, made-up name for the podcast. He was German. He taught German language at the local high school. I didn't know him, but I recognized him when he showed up once a month. His accent was thick. It was thick as a four-day-old sauerkraut that had sat in the sun too long. Simile. Zygmunt's speech, well, it was thick, and he often carried out words a bit too long when he spoke.
Nice to see you, Shirley.
Now I know this was odd. It sounded odd. It seemed odd. I didn't know this man, but I felt uncomfortable when he came to our house during those poker games of yesteryear.
Flash forward 6 years.
Now, not many years later, when I was 17 years old, this same man, I'm 17 at this point, this is a jump ahead, Zygmunt Burkhardt, would push me up against a bus and give me a loud and aggressive lecture in front of my friends while in Czechoslovakia. What? Our high school was taking part in a goodwill trip to four cities in Europe. And our high school band and chorus would sing, and we'd play music, and we'd promote goodwill from the States. Sounds good on paper, doesn't it?
Don't ever change buses! Ever!
Warned Zygmunt, who organized the trip. We traveled in five buses, and we were assigned to a specific bus. Follow the rules. Right. I was always to be on bus 5. But there was a problem with bus 5. Bus 5 had me and all the adults, the chaperones. So, after being bored out of my mind, I changed buses to bus number 2, which had students on it. My friends were riding bus 2, not the adults. Now, as soon as we crossed the border into Czechoslovakia, our five buses pulled past the security stop. We were in Czechoslovakia, but we were soon halted, all five of our buses, and armed soldiers boarded our buses and demanded to see the manifest of who was on each bus, as well as all of our passports. And they lined us up, and they identified us one by one. Now, as soon as the soldiers finished after 30 minutes or so and exited the bus, satisfied they had sufficiently terrified America's youth, Zygmunt Burkhardt yanked me off of bus 2, which I didn't belong on. And these were the days when yanking a kid around and shoving and smacking school kids, it was in the wheelhouse. Yeah, people could do it, I guess. I have to say, that scolding, Zygmunt's disciplinary procedure, was extremely effective for me. Anyway, Zygmunt Burkhardt was right to yell at me at that moment, with his finger poking me in the chest, probably right at the second button of my button-up shirt. He firmly and loudly told me,
"You would be transported directly to the Stuttgart airport and flown home for disobedience."
Now, to this day, my high school buddies, when we get together, still laugh and tell me that was the time when Mr. Burkhardt, the German teacher, pulled me off the bus, yelled at me, and gave me the finger. The poking finger at my chest. But I have to tell you, there was a much larger reason Zygmunt was angry with me. And it had to do with poker night. 6 years prior, the night I was beginning to tell you about. So let's go back to that particular poker night at my family's house. It was the night where, early in the evening, my dad emerged from the smoke-laden basement. He came upstairs and he came and found me and he asked me,
"Hey, Paul, do you want to come down and sit quietly in the poker room? I know you're curious about what we do down there."
Whoa, I thought. A privilege, nice. He knew that I had interest in his poker night, and I did have interest. So, 11-year-old me took a book to read. Well, to fake read. I really wanted to observe and listen. And I was getting that opportunity. My mom had not gotten, or my sister had not gotten. They probably didn't care, but I guess I did. It was a chance to observe the poker night mystery thing.
Oh, now, yeah, yeah. It was raining
Only one man acknowledged me as I entered.
Paul?
Probably because he was my current sixth grade teacher, Mr. G. Mr. G, my teacher, was in my house playing poker in the back room of the basement. Lots of smoke. It is so uncomfortably odd to see a teacher, your current teacher especially, outside of the classroom. Because I really thought at that time, my teachers lived in their classrooms and they didn't go home. They did nothing else in life, but they stayed in there and just did whatever teacher stuff.
Hi, Mr. G.
I said quietly as I stealthily entered the room. Dense cigarette smoke, thick as a California redwood wildfire, billowed and it wafted through the far back room of the basement. And for a minute, I wondered if maybe smoking cigarettes was the reason that everybody got together on poker night. There was a lot of smoke. Nah. Took me a second to figure that one out. People could smoke anywhere back then. I quietly sat down on a beanbag chair that was low and it was near the ground, which put my line of eyesight below two heavy finger-pinching lunchroom tabletops. So I couldn't see the top of the table. I could see the edge and below. From my experience with board games and playing Hands of Gin Rummy with my grandparents, I was taught early on that you never hid cards for any reason. With that in mind, as the night went on, I noticed that from below the table, my line of sight, Zygmunt was not only holding his cigarette below the table, he also carefully was concealing about three or four extra cards below that table as well. Every once in a while, he would carefully bring up a card and insert it into his hand. Zygmunt was cheating at the poker game. He won a few hands, but it was the second time he hid cards and brought new cards down below the table. He scanned the room and his eyes connected and met my eyes, looking right at him. He saw me watching and observing his cheating maneuvers. In that time-stopping tense moment, at least it seemed to stop time in my mind, Zygmunt's eyes and my eyes locked. He's looking straight at me and I'm looking straight at him, all 11 years old of me. His gaze was piercing and I sensed a mix of anger and warning. I felt something and I stubbornly refused to back down. Not like me. He stared right at me and squinted hard as if to say,
"Don't say a word, kid. Don't."
I didn't say anything. I didn't want to cause a scene. I mean, I was just lucky to be there, to be let into the room. So maybe this is something that went on all the time. I didn't know. I just sat there, quietly seething as Zygmunt continued to cheat his way through the smoky, billowy evening. As the night wore on, Zygmunt's behavior became more and more erratic. He would laugh maniacally at his own jokes. He would mutter strange things under his breath. I felt uneasy, and it only got worse. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, didn't the rest of the men see what I saw? Did they not see what he was doing? As I looked around the room at the other card players, apparently not. I noticed the other guys were absorbed in their own hands of poker cards. They didn't see what Zygmunt was doing. I did. I actually began to read the book I had brought with me to distract me from this. But soon, I just couldn't handle it, and my inner voice became my outer voice.
All right. Call it a night, boys. Won't
It was around 9:30 p.m., and poker night had once again reached its conclusion. Scanning the room, all cigarettes had been ground out, extinguished, and all four of the filled ashtrays. It was like a poker game hadn't taken place, but maybe a smoker's marathon of some kind. You know, the smoke did begin to settle. I was nervous, I was anxious, and I felt like years and years of what my grandparents had taught me and told me about, you don't hide cards, you show everything right up front, you're honest. If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. That's the game, and that's why it's called a game. So I couldn't take it any longer. The quiet kid that I was, I found myself speaking up with the trembling voice in a room filled with men I mostly respected. I pointed out directly that Zygmunt had cheated.
He held cards under the table. That's how he kept winning hands. And I saw him from where I was sitting. I saw him holding cards down below.
Now, as I said before, I was a quiet kid, usually not prone to speaking up, but only my dad knew that, though, not the rest of these guys. This was something I thought that maybe a real man might do, an honest man might do. They might call out the person who cheated. They might say what I had just said. I felt I would be helping all the good men there by saying what I said. I was 11. What did I know? Silence filled the room as everybody turned their attention to the accused.
What?
Zygmunt's face flushed with embarrassment and then anger. Apparently he was accustomed to playing by his own rules, and his action always went unnoticed until now. And he had just been called out by an 11-year-old kid. I had just challenged him, forcing him to confront his dishonesty head on. Then it happened. The laughter began. The men got a chuckle out of the 11-year-old kid that had spoken up. Me.
Paul, you've been watching too many Wild Western card games on TV.
Nah, we don't do that here. These are all good men.
You gotta be honest if you're gonna play cards at this game.
Zygmunt, imagine you're cheating.
Yeah. Can't be me.
Not Zygmunt, no. Anybody but him. Joe, maybe you.
Guys, good night. See you next time. Good night.
Soon, the men had filed out of our house, up the stairs, out the door. While my dad stayed in the basement cleaning up, my mom was still grading papers in the front room, so I wanted to help her out and get my mind off of things, so I found myself at the kitchen sink doing something I did occasionally, cleaning potatoes for tomorrow's dinner, with a very quiet desperation, fear, anxiety. I stood there at the sink and kept reviewing in my head what I had seen in the basement and then what I had done and what I had said. Now, after I did say what I said, my father told me to go ahead and leave the far back room of the basement. He suggested I leave immediately, so I did. I was nervous about that. I was nervous that I had disrupted the game or the vibe or whatever. I was afraid I had broken some man code that I just did not know about yet. Because, you know, I don't know, maybe cheating was okay in their game. No, not these guys. I was also extremely afraid because Zygmunt had left, but what if he came back to the house and he hurt me or he hurt my family? Now, my heart was racing. Then just like a bad dream. It happened. The back door of our family home quietly opened, and in stepped an angry Zygmunt. Very angry. He next took one step toward me at the sink. As he approached me, his stern expression was unchanged.
You shouldn't meddle in matters that don't concern you, boy. Got it?
I said,
I know. Mom?
Yes?
She said from three rooms away.
Oh, Paul just cleaned 5 potatoes. Just 5 of them.
Zygmunt reached over the top of my hands and turned on the tap. The sink ran, echoing the tension between the both of us. But in that moment, Zygmunt's tough exterior cracked just slightly, revealing a glimpse of vulnerability.
Kid, life isn't always about honesty. Sometimes it's survival of the fittest. You're just too young to understand that. Too young.
I didn't say it, but I knew what my teacher, Mr. G, would have said.
Play by the same rules. We all need to play by the same rules. All of us.
And with those words resounding in my head, I exited the kitchen, leaving Zygmunt alone to contemplate the weight of his choices. I'm sure the events of that poker game lingered in his mind, leaving that lingering, lasting impact. I know it didn't mine. This incident made me wonder if grown-ups, or anyone for that matter, truly understood and practiced honesty and integrity. A question like this can only be asked by an 11-year-old.
You still here? Zygmunt, hello.
Surely, I forgot something. Auf Wiedersehen.
My parents never did believe me.
You saw anything, Paul. It probably was something else. You saw a tissue. He was holding a napkin or something like that in his hand. I don't know, Mom.
Paul, these just aren't those type of men. These guys are honest, or else we wouldn't let them play cards with us together. They're all good men.
Okay, Dad.
I said. So, I left it alone. Alone as its own memory. You know, that kind of memory that haunts you, even as an adult. Evil and cruelty and cheating, it's all out there. And you'd never, ever really know it unless you see it. Reality exists, but sometimes you need a different perspective. For me, it was from the eyesight level just below the tabletop. As I sat on a beanbag chair just below two heavy, finger-pinching long lunchroom tables. So what's our takeaway here? What did I learn? Did Zygmunt learn anything? I am not sure, because I didn't play poker with the guy. All I know is 6 years later, he was really mad at me in Czechoslovakia. But he kind of had a right to be mad at me. I'm not sure if he stopped his cheating poker behaviors, but I am still very sure he remembers the day he got caught. All I know is this. John Lennon, formerly of the Beatles, once was quoted saying, "Being honest may not get you a lot of friends, but it will get you the right ones." I'll take that. For Life's Learning Curve, we'll see you next time. I'm Paul Hart.
Subscribe to Life's Learning Curve at lifeslearningcurve.org and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Podchaser.
Episode 79 of Life's Learning Curve podcast. Flim Flam Poker Night was put together by Sebastian T. Dog and Paul Hart. Find us where all podcasts are heard. And find us online as well at lifeslearningcurve.org. And please subscribe. We'd love to have you aboard. Episode 79. Flim Flam Poker Night. We'll see you next time for lifelong stories and realer-than-real experiences right here on Life's Learning Curve. We're clear. We're clear. We're clear.